What's the date of sobriety? Your date of sobriety, Rudy?
March 27th,
1987. And your home group?
I have two home groups. The one home group is the welcome group, which meets on Thursday night at 7 o'clock at Ascension Lutheran Church in Columbus, Ohio. And the other one is the open door group, which meets Wednesday at 7:15 at Epworth Church on Carl Road.
Awesome. Okay. I just usually preface that information when we get ready, when we get going here.
Okay.
All right. Mention that. That's kind of how we start out. So I will start out with just introducing you and introducing the talk, and then I'll just jump into some of the questions in this first part before coming to AA. Were there any items that got your attention that you wanted to focus on, or any items you wanted to just skip?
You know, I'm an open book. It doesn't matter. Whatever questions you ask, I'm good.
Okay, we'll go there, and just let us know, and we can always do it as we go that way as well. So thanks again for being here, and I'm going to go ahead and get started. This oral history interview is being conducted by the Area 53 Archives Committee to pass on the history of our fellowship through the shared memories of one of our members. No duplication or reuse of this interview beyond sharing on platforms of the Area 53 Archives Committee is authorized without the express written consent of the members being interviewed in the Area 53 Archives Committee. Today, we are interviewing Rudy Brown from Columbus, Ohio. His sobriety date is March 27, 1987, and his home groups are the Welcome Group and the Open Door Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in the Columbus, Ohio area. My name is Terry, and I am the chairperson of the Area 53 Archives Committee, and today's date is October 20th, 2021. So to get started, we're going to talk about a few things before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. Please tell me a little bit about your life before you found AA.
I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. I have a twin sister. Both my parents are deceased. My brother's deceased. I moved down to Columbus, Ohio in 1987 when I met my wife and got married. We have two daughters. One is 50 and one is 46. Three grandchildren. 29, 22, and 7. And the 7-year-old acts like 40. she runs my daughter's house in Chicago. Like I said, I was born and raised in Cleveland. My mother had 12 brothers and sisters. My father had 11. So I come from a big family. Drinking was always a big part of that on the weekends and so forth like that. And I was sort of afraid because everybody said my uncle, I was just like my Uncle Ed. My Uncle Ed died when he was like 33, and that scared me to death. I didn't want to be like Uncle Ed. So that scared me for a long time. Let's see. Graduated from high school, went into the Army, came home from the Army and lived in Cleveland and so forth like that. Went to work at the high school that I graduated from. I was 22 years old when I got out of the Army. Didn't have a lot of morals and values when I was drinking. I don't know. You know, like people ask, I can't remember what my first drink was. I can't remember when I had my first drink. But I do know that when I had it, it made me feel better than, because I always felt less than. Because being a twin, my sister got everything she wanted because she was a girl. My brother got everything he wanted because he was older than me. So I was sort of like, I always tell everybody I was the black sheep in the family. I had to work for everything. You know what I mean? So I had a lot of doubts. I had a lot of didn't believe that I was worth anything in my family and everything else. So I guess I was always looking for love in the wrong places, you know, but that's what it was like for me. Difficult childhood because I didn't believe that I was worth anything. Didn't believe my parents loved me and everything else. I learned later, even before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that my parents did love me and everything else. So that was. A blessing in disguise, I would say. So basically, I like I said, I was born and raised in Cleveland. I lived in Cleveland all my life, except for the 3 years I was in the Army. And then after I got out of the Army, I moved down to Columbus, Ohio in 1978. Like I said, where I met my wife, my second wife, and we got married. And then I've been in Columbus ever since then, you know. So that's just my life before that, you know. I'm amazed at people that can remember when they had their first drink, what it was and everything else. I'm going to tell you right now, I can't remember when my first drink was. I can't remember what it was, but I do know that I liked it and it made me feel different, better than, and I think I even liked myself at that time when I was drinking, you know what I mean? So that's the thing about me for living. In Cleveland, I worked for the city of Cleveland, then I worked for the city of Cleveland Board of Education and everything else before I moved down here to Columbus. And when I moved down here to Columbus, I started working for the city of Columbus. And then I worked with them for about 6-7 years. And then I got a job with the working for a children's agency here in Columbus, Ohio. And that's where I retired from 8 years ago. You know, I was drinking and everything else. And it was funny because I was thinking about this the other day. I remember I was working for a children's agency and I went to work one day and this young lady said, "Why'd you smell like alcohol?" And wow. I never thought about it, how I smelled when I walked into work, you know, because I was out drinking the night before. And it was, it put a thought in my head. And, you know, there's a saying in the program, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I've always been the slow roll. I have a friend that he's been a friend of mine. I'm 75 years old. He's been a friend of mine since I was 10 years old. So we've been friends for a long time. And he was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and years before I even came in. And I knew it, but it didn't bother me because I wasn't as sick as he was. You know what I mean? So he needed to be here because he had issues. Okay. And but he never preached to me about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I saw the change from what he was to where he was at once he stopped drinking and so forth like that. But it didn't dawn on me that I had a problem with alcohol. It did not dawn on me that I had a problem with alcohol. So, and I thank him to this day because, like I said, he was an example for me before I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And to this day, we are still friends, you know, even though I hate him. I hate him. I don't know why I hate him, but I, you know, but he's just a good friend. He's still a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous up there in Cleveland. And, you know, my first marriage was rocky because I was drinking and so forth like that. And my first wife, Sharon, deserved better. But see, I was in my stages of drinking and so forth like that. And I would get paid. I would give her money to handle the bills and the kids and so forth like that. And the rest of it, I kept for myself. I always kept my stash because I always had to have what I needed. You know what I mean? So, and Sharon was a good woman and she was really a good woman, good mother to the kids. Her first husband had passed away. So she had two boys and I wasn't the type of husband or the father that I should have been because really, I didn't know how to be one, you know, even though my dad worked and every Friday he would get paid. He put the money under the mattress for my mother and my mother worked at the post office in Cleveland. And that's what he did. He just did what he wanted to do. Now, my father drank, but I have to say I never saw him drunk. You know, I only saw him lose his temper once in my whole life. He didn't go out. He was getting ready to go out and do something stupid, but my uncle stopped him from doing that, you know. But basically, my dad was a good man. He really was a good man. He loved my mother. He loved all of us. And for a long time, like I said, I thought that I wasn't loved in my family. And I remember this one time particularly when I was home on leave from the Army. And my dad was balding in the top of his head, you know. And I used to call him Bald Head Johnny. And I was going to go somewhere. And I said, and my dad was sitting on the front porch talking to a neighbor. And I said, "Bald Head Johnny, I'm getting ready to leave." And he laughed. And my neighbor said, "You can't talk to your dad that way." And my dad looked at him and said, "Look, that's my son." And that was the first time I actually ever heard him say that I was his son, that he loved me, you know. And for that, I am forever, ever grateful, you know. But I didn't want to be like my uncles and my dad and stuff, because my dad used to keep liquor in the trunk of his car. You know, I used to go to work with him on Saturdays, and on the way down, he would be preaching in one ear, and we stop at the bar, and he'd go in and have him a drink, and then he'd come out, we go to work. We leave work, he'd go to bar and everything else. But I didn't want to be like him, but I turned out to be like him, but I turned out to be worse than what he was. So That's what my life was. I always felt, like I said, less than and so forth like that. So.
Right. So did you, how did you know you hit bottom? Did you go to treatment? Did you, did someone recommend AA to you?
I'm going to tell you how I hit bottom.
Okay.
And it wasn't my knowledge. Okay.
Sure.
My wife that I'm married to now, Loretta, and we've been married 43 years.
Great.
She wrote me this letter and she told me, because when I met Loretta, she had two girls from her first marriage and her husband had passed away. He had a heart attack. And when I met Loretta, she thought she had met a real man. Okay. And I was doing a lot of drinking and everything else. And for like 6 years, 6 or 7 years, she put up with my drinking, my not coming home when I was supposed to be coming home or whatever. And she wrote me this letter and she told me, either you get some help or you get out. And a guy, in my understanding, I was working part-time at this gas station here in Columbus. And the guy that I was working with, I would go in at 6 o'clock in the morning, get off at 1 so I could go to my full-time job at 2 o'clock. It was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, Rick, I need to go to an AA meeting. And I knew he was in AA. He took me to my first AA meeting. Okay. And it was at a place called The Bridge on Carl Road. And it was like a big barn and it had these big fans sucking the smoke out. And I just felt like right at home, like I was in a bar, you know. He took me to my first meeting and it was just different. You know, there was laughter. There was people having a good time talking and everything else. And I couldn't tell you what happened at the meeting because I really wasn't there for the meeting. I was just there to get Loretta off my back. All right. For some reason, I just liked the place. I liked the people in there and everything else. And I was only doing one meeting a week. That's all I was doing, one meeting a week, because I was telling Loretta, okay, I'm going to do this, you know. But my goal was to get her off my back, and then I was going to go back to drinking and so forth. But see, it's funny. A guy to my understanding, I had been going just that one meeting a week at the Bridge, and it was on Saturday, and it was the open door group, as a matter of fact. That was the open door group, my first home group. And I was going there for like 7 months, just that one meeting a week. And it dawned on me, I hadn't had a drink. It also dawned on me that God had taken that compulsion away from me. You know, I wasn't even worried about the drinking and so forth like that. And for me, I tell anybody when I give a lead, don't follow my lead. Because see, I was in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years before I even got a sponsor, before I even read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous or did it, even the steps. You know, I used everybody in the program as a sponsor, per se, you know, and I'm grateful for that, because I came in 87. My youngest daughter was in college and she got date raped. And I'm thankful for the women in the program who talked to me, because they taught me and told me how to talk to my wife and my daughter, you know, how to get through this. The men in the program stopped me from going down to the school and killing somebody. You know what I mean? So the program showed me a lot of love when I first came in here, and they just, you know, they stuck around and hung with me for a long time, even though I wasn't doing everything the way I was supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? But like I said, God took that compulsion away, and really I didn't have nothing else to do, you know? So I just kept going to meetings.
What do you, were there any precipitating events or anything you can remember that was kind of the turning point for you when you started to work the steps or got a sponsor?
Well, the turning point for me was I was in this program 8 years, and I had role models that there's a lady named Norma S. She's here in Columbus, Ohio. And the first meeting that I went to at the open door group was, she was there. And for some reason, she took a liking to me for some reason. Okay. And she took me under her wings. And then there was this cantankerous old Irish man named Bob Quigley. For some reason, he took a liking to me. And I hung around with them, because like I said, I was just doing one meeting a week. And then I eventually went up to two meetings a week, and I was doing three meetings a week, you know. But those two stood out for me in those 6-7 years that I didn't have a sponsor and everything else. But I did have a home group. I always went to the open door group. And then when they started the Thursday meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at the Ascension Lutheran Church, I started going to that. So that made that my second home group. But those two were like my mainstays. And there was a gentleman named Albert Walker Albert Walker was an older black man, and he had so much class, you know. And I never heard him raise his voice. He was always there to help anybody that was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and everything else. I gravitated toward him. It made my journey into the real program of Alcoholics Anonymous a lot easier, because I had those three, and they, you know, there's people like Lowell and all of them. Everybody was crazy about Lowell and all of them, you know what I mean? And they were great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not dissing them or anything like that. But Norma Spratlin, Bob Quigley, and Albert Walker were my mainstays in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember asking Bob Quigley one day, I said, "Bob, I think I need to get a sponsor." And Bob looked me dead in my eye and he said, "No shit. You think you're ready to do this deal now?" And I got my first sponsor. And my first sponsor was Bob K. And Bob K started me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He started me into doing a whole lot of things that you're supposed to do in order to stay sober, in order to be a whole human being. You know, he took me through the steps. He took me through, you know, I had never been in my life. I came into this program when I was 40, and I had never been on a retreat or anything like that. I went to my first AA retreat, and it was funny because, and I'm only telling you this because this is just the way I am and the person that got me to go to the retreat. There's a gentleman named Ron R. in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous today. He's still, and him and I are good friends. He kept asking me to go on this retreat down in North Carolina, and it's 288 drunks in the mountains for the weekend. And I kept putting him off. And then my sponsor, Bob, said, "We're going." And we went to this retreat. And I tell you, a spiritual awakening, it is nothing like being around a whole bunch of drunks, away from everybody and anything. And all you're dealing with is AA and trying to get a spiritual understanding of a God of your understanding. And I was in this mountain. And for 8 years, we went to that retreat. 8 years. And then Ron decided we were coming back from that retreat. And he said, "Why don't we do one in Ohio?" And for the last 18 years, we run a retreat every year on the four absolutes here in Ohio. And we didn't do it this year or last year because of the pandemic. But I tell you, it's amazing what can happen to you if you really, really want this program. But you have to, and you don't sacrifice anything. You gain when you put everything into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have friends that are not in the program, and they know I'm in the program. I make no bones that I'm in the program. I tell anybody, you know, I'm a proud alcoholic. When I even introduce myself, I always say, "My name is Rudy Brown. I'm a proud alcoholic." I am, because I would not be where I am today if it wasn't for the program. I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have the fellowship around me. You know, when my dad passed away, I was a drunk. And I remember we buried my dad in Mississippi. You know, we lived in Cleveland. I didn't go back home for 3 weeks, drunk as a skunk down there. When my mother died in 97, I was sober. You know, my mother had Alzheimer's, and my uncle told me, he said, "You know, if she had her full practice, she would be proud of you today." I am so grateful for that. I would not have had that if it had not been for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not have had that if it hadn't been for the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I tell people, and I might be going on long, and I'm sorry if I am, but I just, sure. You know, I would not be where I am today. I would not have the family that I have today if it wasn't for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But mainly, a God of my understanding gave me enough common sense to be afraid when she gave me that letter and said, "Either get some help or get out," to come into the program. And like I said, it took me a little while to get the program, but I didn't do anything wrong prior before getting the program. So I'm good to go. I am good to go. So that's me. I'm sorry.
That's wonderful. Do you want to share a little bit about your experiences sponsoring others?
There's two things that I sponsor. Okay. I have two guys that I sponsor. I don't do a lot of sponsoring because mainly Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a lot, but I also believe I've been around enough people in the program that I hang around that I know in my mind that could be a better sponsor for somebody else. And so, you know what I do? When people come into the program, because one of the guys that I sponsor right now, when he first came into the program, he came to my home group and he said he was new and everything. And we were talking. I said, okay, I'm going to find you a sponsor. So I'm a finder. I find people sponsors when they come into the program. Okay. I have like two guys that I sponsor right now. I have a guy that's, my daughter lives in Chicago and we're in Chicago back and forth. And there's guys in Chicago that I go to meetings with and so forth like that. And one of them wanted me to be a sponsor. And I told him I can't be a long distance sponsor because I'm a firm believer. If you're a sponsor, you need to be able to be with that person and meet with that person in person. You know what I mean? So I don't do long distance sponsorship, but I have two sponsees right now. And I've been their mentor or whatever for about 7 or 8 years. Yeah, you know what I mean? And for me, that's good enough. I don't do, you know, service work. I don't do service work. This is my service work. I'm there at the meeting before the meeting starts. You know, I greet people at the door. And matter of fact, if you come to either one of my home groups, you'll know I'm there before you get out your car because I'm loud, I'm laughing, I'm having a good time. But when people come in and they, you know, they're new, I'm there to greet them. I'm there to help them, you know, get on the right track. I'll even tell them, you know, I'll be your temporary sponsor till we can find you a real sponsor. You know what I mean? And I do that. That's my service work. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm afraid to be a full-time sponsor. You know what I mean? But I'll help you find your sponsor, you know, because I don't want you to miss out on what this program has to offer. So that's my thing on sponsorship. And that's all I got on it. I got the two. They run me crazy. So I'm good.
Good. Could you share about any particular tough time when you were tempted to take a drink or how you might have navigated that situation?
You know, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I have never thought about taking a drink since I've been in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not one time. You know, I mean, I've had dreams, you know, where you might have a dream about drinking and so forth like that. But when I wake up, it's gone, you know. But I've never had a compulsion to take a drink since I've been in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. An old timer told me this, and I tell a lot of people this all the time. An old timer told me your sobriety has to be important to you because if it's not important to you, it's not important to anybody else. And my sobriety is important to me. I've been here, like I said, 34 years. And that doesn't mean a thing because it's all about today, you know. But my sobriety is number one for me. It is number one for me because I have a wife. If I tell Loretta I'll be home at 8 o'clock, I'll be home at 8 o'clock or I'll call her. There were times she didn't know when I was coming home. You know, my granddaughters have never seen me drink. You know, my friends that I go out, I have friends that I love jazz and we go to jazz clubs and everything else. And we do birthday dinners and everything else. I don't drink. They know that. You know, I go somewhere as long as I have a ginger ale, two wedges of limes and three cherries, I'm good to go. You know what I mean? That's my drink of choice now. You know, if you come to my house today, I have a bar upstairs because my wife drinks, my kids drink. I have a bar downstairs in my man cave. Okay. Because my friends, when we play cards and so forth, they drink. It's not on them to keep me sober. It's on me to keep me sober. So I don't have a problem with people, you know, people drinking in front of me and so forth. Like, just like I don't have a problem with people smoking in front. I used to smoke, you know, but it don't bother me because my sobriety is very important to me. It's very important to me. So I don't worry about drinking anymore. I mean, it could happen, but I think as long as I believe that a higher power is keeping me sober and keeping me in the program of Alcoholics, I don't worry about it. It does not enter into my mind. It doesn't.
Great. Have you ever been involved in forming a new group or been involved in an area where new groups started up and how that came about?
No, I've been to meetings where it just started and so forth like that. And okay. What I do, how do I put this so it doesn't sound like I'm trying to be bigger than I am? If it fits my forte, okay, I go back. I mean, there's some meetings that just doesn't gel with me. and I won't go back because I've already set up a prejudice against that meeting, and I don't want to deter somebody else from going to that meeting, so I don't do that. You know what I mean? But I think I never went to treatment, and I really don't have a problem with people that have gone to treatment. You know what I mean? I had a sort of saying, it doesn't matter how you get here as long as you stay here. So if you had to go to treatment to get here, then stay here, you know? But no, I go to meetings for a long time, I didn't even go to out-of-town meetings, okay? And as much as I go in and out, I was going in and out of town, and I'm in this AA poker club here in Columbus, and we play once a month. And one night we were playing, and it's six of us, my sponsor and four other guys in the program. And one of the guys came back and he says, God, I just went to this out of town meeting and it was out of sight. It was good. And like I said, you know, I'm quickly, sometimes slow. I'm slow. I opened my mouth and I said, when I'm out of town, I don't go to out of town meeting. I got crucified. Okay. So this is the honest guy truth. 7 years ago, when my daughter got ready to have her first child in Chicago, Illinois, I told her, find me an AA meeting. There's an AA meeting clubhouse in Chicago, 3.5 blocks down from my daughter's house. And for 7 years, that's where I go when I'm in Chicago. And I go to other meetings in Chicago and so forth like that, because I have two home groups in Chicago. Okay. Awesome. When I go to Chicago, that was probably another one of the best things that people jumped on me about going out of town meeting, because I didn't realize what I was missing. You know what I mean? I did not realize what I was missing. So now when I go to Chicago, like I said, I got two home groups there. This Zoom meeting, I love Zoom. It's amazing. I don't know what we would have done without Zoom meetings when they canceled all the meetings and so forth like that. You know, I'm a type of person, I like to see people, be with people and so forth like that. And that's what Zoom does for me, you know. I would not trade my life in right now for nothing in the world. Nothing. You know,
that's wonderful. Did you have any experiences regarding our central office or our area that you'd like to share?
No.
Okay.
Got it. I go down there when I need stuff and so forth like that. I know there's a lot of great people to work down there. And I used to go down there a lot to get stuff and so forth like that. But the only thing is, they moved out too damn far. Okay. You're all way out there on the west side. I need a passport to go out to the central office. So, why are you laughing? I'm serious.
I'm relating. So relating. I'm in New Albany. It's very far.
That's where I am.
Yeah. Okay. But I get to go down there a lot. Do you have anything you'd like to see in AA that, you know, increase or change or opportunities for growth that you can think of based on your experiences?
For me personally, I don't like no comment meetings. I really don't. I think it hurts the newcomers. When a newcomer comes in, if you don't have no comments, And they don't know what's going on, it hurts them, I think. I don't like no comment meetings. I really don't. You can talk to the person afterwards, but there's not a lot of people that will probably take the time to talk to that newcomer. So what is he going to learn? You know what I mean? You know, I think in AA, I learned by example when I came in here, you know. Our 11th tradition, attraction rather than promotion. That's how I learned. That's how I stayed here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous before I got into the real program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think it's a disadvantage to newcomers when you don't have comments. Yeah. Yeah. You'll say, okay, do we have any newcomers? And they'll raise their hand. And a few people might, after the meeting, go over and talk to the person and so forth like that. But you don't get that coverage that you would get by comments and so forth. Somebody, because you can relate to comments. Okay. You can't relate to just looking at people and so forth like that. So I don't like the no comment meetings. I mean, I'll shut my mouth. I'm not going to say nothing. I am going to mark, because I have my home group. We're into no comments now. And that was, they did a group conscience on it personally, and tomorrow I'm gonna, when they did the group conscious, I was in Chicago, so they're having a group conscious tomorrow, so I had to bring that up. Even if, and if it doesn't change, that's okay, but I have to get it off my chest. I just think it's I think it's vital for new people to hear old timers or somebody's got, you know, 2 days of sobriety. You know, I'm going through this. They need to know that they're not by themselves, and they can't do that if you don't have comments, you know. And then a lot of people don't step up to help the newcomers. So comments to me are valuable. But I think that's the only thing that I dislike about AA at this point in time is the no comment meetings. I think it hurts the newcomers. That's just me.
Right. We'll talk a little bit about how did COVID-19 affect the AA groups you attended or how AA worked in your life?
When they started closing down the meetings, I am so thankful for Zoom, because I don't really believe AA could survive without Zoom. You know what I mean? Because it was, I mean, you got the idea of fact, okay, we got this deadly disease running around here, so you can't be with people and so forth like this. I'm an alcoholic. I need to be with my people. You know what I mean? Talking on the phone is good, but there's nothing like camaraderie for me. You know what I mean? So Zoom was a blessing, and whoever thought of the idea, thank God for them, because that, I believe, kept a lot of people sober. It kept a lot of people sober. I know even now that I'm in Columbus, I still have meetings that I go to in Chicago on Zoom. You know, my two home groups there, I go to them on Monday and Thursday, you know, in Chicago. Zoom is a blessing. It is a blessing, you know, and I think that it's probably going to be a way of life here pretty soon. I'm grateful for that. But there's nothing like in-person meetings for me. In-person meetings for me are number one. But if you don't have in-person, Zoom is a good way to stay sober and stay in contact. And I met so many people on Zoom. You know, I go to a meeting on Saturday evening in South Carolina. Never been to South Carolina, okay? But I met this person in Chicago on Zoom, and they live in Bluffton, South Carolina. I have a home group in South Carolina. You know, it's just the camaraderie. You cannot beat it. Fellowship, that's what we use. I like camaraderie. But anyway, fellowship, you can't beat it. You cannot beat it. I mean, I have probably 270 some names in my phone book on my phone, and about maybe half of them are AA people. You know what I mean? Because I think once you become an AA person, you're stuck for life. You're stuck for life. You don't have to worry about anything else. No matter what happens, I can call somebody that's in my phone book. You know what I mean? And they're going to be there. And it's sort of like they might not have the answer I need or the want or the right one, but at least I get to talk to somebody that's on my road. You know what I mean? I'm on a road of I can't drink. Anything can come up. And that's what I love about comment meetings. People can say something that I might never have experienced, but it gives me an insight to, if it does happen, I got an insight to maybe I can avoid whatever can mess me up. You know what I mean? So that's why I went back to comments. I didn't mean to do that, but that's why it's important for me to stay in the middle of the boat, as they say.
Do you have any other items or anything else you'd like to share before we conclude? You've covered a lot of ground, Rudy. You did a great job, and just wanted to make sure that we've given you an opportunity to add anything.
I love Alcoholics Anonymous because, you know, it says in the book, we get a second life. And I'm just trying to live the best second life that I can. You know, I would not have the respect on my wife or my kids if I hadn't came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not have the friends that I have in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's funny, here in Columbus, Ohio, Poindexter is the oldest Black AA group in Ohio. I was in this program 15 years and never went to it. And when I say this in jest, and everybody that knows me knows that this is in jest. A redneck took me to my first AA meeting down there at Poindexter. You know, you heard me talk about Ron R. He took me to Poindexter for the first time. And I had been in the program almost 15, 16 years, had never been there. You know, they say, well, some might never mix. It is so true. It is so true. I love this program. I love what it has given me. You know, I can look in the mirror in the mornings and feel good about myself. You know, I'm still ugly as hell, but I don't have to ask somebody, what did I do last night? You know what I mean? Because I know what I did last night. You know, I can remember a lot of times having to ask somebody, what did I do? And have to take their word for it. And it could have been a lie. I wouldn't know, because the alcohol had just confused my whole way of life and brain. You know, I don't have to go through that anymore. You know, I don't have to worry about what I'm going to do tomorrow. I just worry about what I do today. You know what I mean? I have 34 years in this program, but trust me, it's all about today. As long as I don't drink today, I'm ahead of the program. People ask me how my day is going, and I'm going to tell you, and it never changes. And this is what I tell everybody every day when they ask, if they ask me. If I get up in the morning, that's the start of a good day. Okay? If I go out the house and my wife, Loretta, doesn't ask for the house keys, that means I got a home to come back to. Okay? And if I don't have a drink today, I'm batting a thousand. That's what it's all about for me. You know what I mean? It is amazing. Once God took that compulsion away from me, gave her the sense to write me this letter to tell her, me to either get some help or get out, and put that fear in me, and I have been here this long, I am a blessed man. I am a blessed man. I've known Phil for a long time, and he knows I'm a foe, okay? And I ain't got a problem with that. But I have so much fun with life today. I really do. The friends that I have in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, wouldn't trade them in for nothing in the world. You know what I mean? Because they're my lifeline. They're my lifeline. And that's what AA is a lifeline. All you have to do is want to have sobriety and stay sober. Stay in the middle of the boat and you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You know, I'm honored that you guys would even ask me and you're not even paying me. And I didn't even have to lie. Okay. It's the truth. So, I don't know if I've helped anybody, but you know what? It made me feel good today to realize that I would not be where I am today if it wasn't for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in the room. So I thank you for asking me. I thank you for putting up with me for what, 35 minutes or longer, is, you know, but it's been a good 35, 40 minutes.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for your time and your consideration and sharing your story.